Parshas Behar. Okay, so I want to share with you an idea tonight, this morning, whatever, by Rabbi Riskin. He kind of discusses the essence of Yovel, but I think to a certain extent it also applies to Shemitah. So we're going to try to understand Shemitah and Yovel just a little bit better.
Excuse me. So let's take a look at the first source.
Vayidaber Hashem Moshe b'har Sinai le'emor. God speaks to Moshe b'har Sinai le'emor. So Rashi has a very, very, very famous question on these psukim. He asks, Ma inyan Shemitah etzel har Sinai? What is the connection between har Sinai and Shemitah? Right? Why we have a lot of mitzvos that are mentioned in the Torah, and they don't all say Bahar Sinai Lemor. So why is it by Shemitah? Dafka says by the Rosh Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor. So Rashi gives his own answer. He explains that everything was given at Sinai, and even though when you go to Devarim, you don't really get like the details of Shemitah and Yovel mentioned once again. It's interesting. I thought about that. Like, is it that we really have no mention of Shemitah at all in Dvarim? It's possible, or certainly it doesn't go into detail of it. That's what Rashi is saying. Says Rashi's answer. So the Chasam Sofer has a beautiful, beautiful answer. He says that Shemitah is actually not a logical mitzvah at all, in the sense that the idea of Vitziviti Abirchati makes no sense at all. The idea that, you know, if you want to tell me that there's financial benefits to leaving the field empty, fine, everybody will tell you that. That's scientifically true. But to say that all of a sudden in the sixth year or in the eighth year, the yield will be significantly more, it's not logical at all. So the only way that you're going to be able to keep it is if you believe in Sinai and Hashem, and if you believe in the concept of Har Sinai, and you believe in the concept that Hashem gave us the Torah, then you're going to be willing to believe in the concept of Etziviti Abirchati, that Hashem will take care of you. So just, it's interesting, coming straight off my trip with the farmer last week. So he told this crazy story that he grew, I don't think I told this story last week. If I did, you'll just stop me. He grew spaghetti squash, and he was like completely blown away because here it is. It's like 2-3 weeks before Rosh Hashanah. You have to get everything out of the ground, because if it's still in the ground after Rosh Hashanah, it's considered Shemitah. So he's harvesting and harvesting and harvesting, and it doesn't stop, like the amount that's coming. So he calls a seed company and says, listen, I don't know what kind of seeds you sent me, but please, whatever it was, send me the same thing the following year. He goes, it's unbelievable. So they said, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, we sent you the same stuff we sent you the year before and the year before. So they came down to his field. They were curious what happened. So they took a square meter and they measured it. And then they checked what the yield was. And it was double what the yield should have been. And so he said, there's no logical explanation. There's no scientific explanation. And so it's Tziviti Abirchati. It's exactly what Shemitah promises. But it doesn't make any sense, and there's no scientific reason for it to be correct. So says the Chasam Sofer, that's why it says, Bahar Sinai Le'emor. The same way we believe in God, we also believe it's Tziviti Abirchati. Okay, not necessarily pshat, but it's a beautiful, beautiful explanation. So he then says, Dabir al-Bani Yisrael ma'arat aliyam ki tavo al-aretz asher ani notam lachem, v'shavtaretz Shabbat la'Hashem. So talk to the Jewish people and say to them, when you come to the land that I asher ani notam lachem, that I'm going to give you, v'shavtaretz Shabbat la'Hashem, the land should rest. She'shanim tizah sadecha, v'she'shanim tizmor karmecha, v'safta tvuata. 6 years you should plant, 6 years you should reap and you should collect the harvest. Uvashana shvit Shabbat Shabbaton yal aretz Shabbat Lashem sadcha lo tizra v'karmecha lo tizmor. And then in the seventh year you can't do any of this stuff. So these, just like parenthetically, these are the things that you're not allowed, are forbidden, midoraisa. Right.
Is it strange how Pasuk Gimel is written? It almost seems like it's 12 years. 6 years you should plant, and 6 years you should plant and reap. It's 6 years you should plant, and 6 years you should. So, like, it seems like 12. Clearly, it's not, because now it's right. Like the seventh year. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's because the first Sheishanim is talking about your field. And the second six is talking about your vineyard. Right? Tizra Sadecha and Tizmor Karmecha.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, we do learn a lot of stuff from here, meaning what we do see from here is that midoraisa, you're forbidden to do Zuria for 6 years, and for the seventh year, rather, and also Tizmor is forbidden. Those are the things that we're not allowed to do. But yeah, I mean, I guess it could have just said Sheishanim Tizra Sadecha, Utizmor Karmecha, Vasafta Tuata, and you would be in the same place. Why it says it twice? It's a good question.
I was also thinking that it's also there, like all produce, everything is on different cycles. So you it's not the same 6 years, you know, from Tishrei to Elul, because there are just different cycles also.
Oh, so that's very interesting, because right there is. There's right that is true. Like this year, let's say, even already, like even Hanukkah time, you were able to like harvest fruits, and it wasn't a Shemitah issue. But vegetables were knocked out right away. And next year, the day after Rosh Hashanah, you'll be able to pull vegetables out of the ground, and that'll be fine. But if you come to my house, you won't be able to, you know, I shouldn't say you. If you come to my house, you certainly will be able to, like, take my pomegranates and my lemons without a problem, because they're going to be Shemitah. So, yeah, Steve, it could be that's why it's a different count of 6 years both ways. It makes it a little bit trickier. Like, Shemitah is not really over on Rosh Hashanah. It's only over on vegetables, but it's going to continue for fruit for, you know, months to come afterwards. Okay, Pasuk Hey. And certain things that come up on their own, that's a sfiach, you make no effort for it to come up. You can't cut it all. And grapes, you also can't collect. It's a year of rest for the land. And it's a year of rest for you, for your slaves, for your workers, and anybody that lives on your field. So, right, that the idea that I could take off and not work, but my workers who are not Jewish could work instead, that is not that's not okay. And to your animals that are in your field, all the harvest you can eat, right? Meaning all the food they can eat. So the animals can come in, they can take anything they want, the field is open. Okay, so the first question that I have is, what's the purpose of Shemitah? What are we supposed to get out of it? And then to that, I think Rabbi Hatton pointed out that it can't just be that it's agricultural, right? It's true that there's benefit to the field laying fallow, but if it was just agricultural, then why does the field have to be open for everyone, right? It'd be okay just to say you can't plant in the seventh year. So, right, 6 years out of seven you could plant, and the seventh year you can't. Why do we have to make it that the field is open for everyone? And if it's simply tzedakah, then that also wouldn't be enough, because then just give everything away to the poor people. The fact is that the richest guy in the world and the poorest guy in the world have the ability to come into the field one, you know, all at the same time. So it can't be like a charity-based mitzvah, but it can't be an agricultural-based mitzvah only. There has to be more to it than just that. Okay, any other questions on the first couple psukim before we move on to Yovel? Okay. Pasichet. V'safarta l'cha sheva shabtot shanim sheva shanim sheva pamim v'yud l'cha yimei sheva shabtot shanim teisha v'arbaim shana. So you have to count seven sets of seven. And that's 49 years, right? So the Torah is giving us like a quick math lesson. If you have seven sets of seven, you will come out to 49 years. I think I think Rashi points out that if you think that you could just do 42 years on and 7 years off, it's not to be. It has to be, you know, 6 out of 7, 7 times. So on the 7th year, in the 7th month, on the 10th day, so in Yom Kippur, that is when we blow the shofar. And so you sanctify the 50th year, and ukratem dror ba'aretz echol yoshva, and you shall proclaim liberty in the land for all the inhabitants. Yovel hi tialachem, it's yovel v'shatem yishol chuzatov v'shol mishpato tashuvu, and everyone will return to their ancestral plots and to their families. They will return. Now this pasuk is so packed with information. First off, right, it's a incredibly famous pasuk because right, it was right. The founding fathers of the United States, who were definitely religious people, believed in the Bible. Right, they chose to put this pasuk on the Liberty Bell. Why? Because they really, really, really believed in the idea of Yovel, the idea that v'shavtem isha luchuzato, that each person shall really kratem d'ror ba'aretz, that there shall be liberty in the land. Right, that was what they believed in. So Rabbi Riskin does discuss in a separate article whether Yovel is a Jewish concept or a universal concept. Right, so to a certain extent, it's clear that it's universally accepted in the sense that there was a strong belief that this was a founding tenet right of the United States, but also the key.
Well, I was only there once or twice on class trips, but I think didn't they just take up that snippet, those 5 words?
Yeah. Ukraten dror ba'aretz echol yoshva, right?
I mean, out of context, it works for what their purpose. I don't think they were talking about Yovel or anything.
Right, no, but the idea that somehow the world has to be rooted in the idea that there is an automatic reset, that's I think what it's saying is like that it can't be that like the world forever people are enslaved. I mean, again, it's fun, ironic that I think, you know, the founding fathers still believed in some concept of slavery, right? There was liberty, not for all, but for many. I don't think they were saying that once out of every 50 years there had to be a reset per se, but I think they believed that there was like, somehow the world had to have an opportunity for people to be free. Okay, so I guess the bigger thing that I want to focus on in this pasuk is the beginning. V'kidashtem et shnat ha-chamishim, that you have to proclaim liberty in the 50th year. It sounds a lot like the idea of kiddush ha-chodesh, right? What happened by kiddush ha-chodesh? That the witnesses would come and they would say that they saw the new moon, and then the Av Beis Din would, you know, after they were grilled and proven to be, you know, true witnesses, they were telling the truth. So what would happen? The Av Beis Din would say Mekudash Mekudash, and then everybody would answer back Mekudash Mekudash. Rashi seems to say that Beknisata Mekachinot Beit Din Vomra Mekudesh Hashana. They would actually the same way Kiddush HaChodesh would be Mekadesh the month, so here they would be Mekadesh the year. Then he continues on by saying, "Kratem deror lavadim." This was for slaves. Ben nirtzav in shelo kalulo sheish shanim shnimkar. If a person decided that he wanted to have his ear pierced, then he would be stuck as a slave. So on the 50th year, he would go free. So even though it says vavado leolam in parshat mishpatim, we know it's not leolam, but it's only for 50 years. And similarly, if a person sold himself as a slave, for 6 years, so he would go free in Yovel. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Malshon Dror Kimedayer Be Daira. So Rabbi Yehuda says, what does the word Dror mean? It means to like to be a person that lives there. Shadar b'chol makom shu rotzev einu b'rshut acherim. So what's the idea of Kratev Dror, liberty? Liberty is I could live wherever I want. right? That's what dror is. I'm not limited in where I can go. I'm not limited in what I can do, but I have freedom. Yovel he shenazo muvdel mishar shani b'nekivat shem lalavada umashma yovel shma al shem tkiat shofar. So Rashi says, what's yovel? Yovel means that the year is separated by its name. And what's its name? Its name is Yovel. And why is it called Yovel? Because of tkiat shofar, the shofar that we blow there. Now, it's interesting. I think Rabbi Hatton was the one that said this, but Yovel for most people back then was once in a lifetime. Maybe someone was lucky, you know, you could theoretically have like gotten a second Yovel, even if a person lived, you know, if a person was born in a Yovel, then they could theoretically live to be 100 and get three Yovels in. But for the most part, most people, you got one Yovel in back then. It was a really remarkable, remarkable type of year. Everything changed. The world went back to its original order, people's fields. People went back, you know, left slavery. That's what Yovel was all about. So I three more questions, all on Yovel. The first one, again, is what is the purpose of Yovel? What am I supposed to learn from Yovel? What are we supposed to accomplish during Yovel? Next is, why do we blow the shofar on Yovel? We don't blow a shofar on in Shemitah, but we blow a shofar in Yovel. And then the next question is, why does this have to be Be'asur L'Chodesh HaShvi'i? Why is it that it happens on Yom Kippur? Why not Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah is synonymous with the shofar. Yes, it's true. We blow shofar on Yom Kippur at the end of Yom Kippur to signify that it's over. But why is it that on Yom Kippur itself we blow the shofar to signify that we're in a Yovel year? Which, by the way, P.S. You've already been in a Yovel year at this point in time for 10 days. So why is it that we are all of a sudden now blowing the shofar? Right? If you think back to the beginning of Shemitah this year, so the famous video that went out about the farmers dancing off of Shalavim, right? So they danced off on Erev Rosh Hashanah, right? Moments before Rosh Hashanah, the fields were laid fallow. It doesn't happen during on Erev Yom Kippur, because by the time Erev Yom Kippur comes, the farmers have already experienced a few days of not being able to harvest their produce.
Is it a few days, or is it already, if it's the 50th year?
Yeah, so the 50th year, they've already been in it.
For a year,
right? There's nothing happening. But even so, if you want to tell it, when does Yovel start? So Yovel starts on the moment Rosh Hashanah begins, right? When Rosh Hashanah begins, so from a practical standpoint, for Aleph and Bet Tishrei, you can't do anything anyway. Like, I wondered, you know, the farmers in Shalavim, they're going to come back to the field. So I wondered, like, are they going to make, like, some sort of ceremony for it? If they do make a ceremony for it, it's not going to be on Erev Rosh Hashanah, because on Erev Rosh Hashanah, you can't go back into the field anyway. So it'll be on what? Motzei Rosh Hashanah. So, you know, is it going to be like minutes after Rosh Hashanah, they'll go straight to their fields? I mean, their fields are right by their shul anyway, so they can walk out there. Is it going to be the morning of? Or is it Shemitah's over, like, you got to get back to work, so nobody has time to, like, dance out there, like, you have a couple weeks of work to clean the fields up? I don't know. But why Yom Kippur?
Are the fields fallow in the Yovel year as well?
Yeah, it's really an unbelievable thing. They're
consecutive years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Two-year
right, which if you think about it, it's more than 2 years. It's it ends up being 3 years.
10 days. So 3 years. No, it's the seventh year, the seventh cycle.
You didn't plant. You can harvest coming into Shemitah. You can't plant the Shemitah. You can't plant the Yovel. Take time once after the oval's over, you first have to plant before you can reap, so it's like 2.5 years.
Oh, the fruit you can, the vegetables you cannot.
For fruit doesn't grow in 1 year. So you're right, if the tree survives.
The trees are there. They can pick it.
Yeah, but right, even the vegetables, you can't plant them until Motzei Shemitah. So it's not like, you know, on the day after Shemitah, stuff is coming up from the ground that you can get. It's like you have to wait a bit to get that stuff. So
you think it was a meeting because the shofar blast is a different one than you usually do for Yom Kippur? So you blow a teruah, not a tekiah.
Right. I mean, any time you have a truah in the Torah, it's really like tekiah shvarim tekiah. I don't think it's just a truah. I mean, right. I think it's more, it's on Yom Kippur, right? Like, as opposed to motzi Yom Kippur. But again, why do we do it on Yom Kippur? Okay. And the last question, actually, it's not true. Second to last question is, why do we have this whole process? This is like a much more significant thing than just like, okay, you know, we clap. It's Rosh Chodesh. Here, there's an elaborate process of tkiyas shofar and mekudeshet. Why do we need all of this by Yovel? We certainly don't have any of this by Shmita. Okay, pasuk yet Aleph Yovel hishnata chavishim shanat yalechem lo tizor lo tiktzirua tzivicha lo tizun zireha. So it's Yovel. It's the 50th year. You can't do anything at all again. Ki Yovel hi kodesh yalechem nasadet ochlu etvuata. It's Yovel, everybody could eat from the field. V'shnat Yovel azo, tashu ish el achuzato. And it's in the 50th year, everyone goes back to their homes. Fine. So,
That's probably why. I mean, this is a big uprooting of stuff that's happening in Yovel. Shemitah, there's no uprooting. Everything just kind of, you know, stops. You stop working the field. Here you're talking about slaves being released, fields transferring back in possession.
So that's why...
That happened without a big proclamation.
Right. Okay. Fine. So that would answer.
Slaves are released by Shemitah. Whatever.
Every Shemitah.
Return of the fields.
Only the slaves that opted to remain in forever.
No, I don't think they were. I don't think they went out on Shemitah.
No, the ones who got their ears pierced, they went out at Yovel. The other guys, you're only in for a max of 6 years. You get released every.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't think you get released at Shemitah.
Yeah, otherwise no one would take that thing except for the first year.
Right, you would never get a full 6 years then, unless you became a slave.
That's what you'd get.
No, I think
the loans
get forgiven.
Right, loans are forgiven in Shemitah.
Every Shemitah.
Right, we're all going to rush next year, right, either right before or right after Rosh Hashanah to sign a Prus Bowl, so this way all of our debts are held on to. But I think slaves worked for 6 years and then they went free in the seventh year, but I don't think it's tied into a Shemitah. In theory, if I became a slave in the 47th year, I would, or I guess any time after 6 years out of Yovel, so then I would not get a full 7 years. I wouldn't get a full 6 years. Okay, so yeah, so really definitely the mitzvah tells us that there's something going on here that requires more of a process. And so so that could be why we make such a big deal. Why in Yom Kippur though? Why a shofar? We'll try to understand that a little bit better. So what does Yovel mean? So the Ramban tells us that, I didn't have the patience to try to figure it out, but it is interesting. I just want to point this out. This has nothing to do with our shir. But I was looking for one source yesterday in Sefaria. Okay, I'm back here preparing in my house. No English translation. Just gave me the Hebrew text. Last week, I looked on Sefaria in America. So annoying that it had like English Hebrew. Grabbing a piece of Gemara was so frustrating. And today, last night, whatever, nothing at all. So anyway, whatever. So the Ramban says, what is Yovel? So Yovel comes from the idea of to walk. How he gets that, I'm not sure, but Riskin quotes it. It means that you can walk wherever you want. Rashi tells us, no, what's Yovel? Yovel comes from the idea of, it's a shofar. So which one is it? And what exactly does that mean? So if you take a look at the next source, Shmos Yotet, so it says, this is by Har Sinai. Right, God comes to Moshe and says, tell the Jewish people that they should sanctify themselves today and tomorrow, and they should wash their clothing. That on the third day, that God will come down in front of all the people on Har Sinai.
and make a border around the mountain, and the people should not touch it. Kol nogeh b'har mot yumane. If it touches the mountain, will surely die. Lo tiga bo yad ki sakol yisakel yavro yared. Don't even touch it a little bit, because if you do, you are going to be stoned or killed. Each doesn't make a difference. It's a person, man or person. Or a person or man, I'm sorry, a man, an animal or a person, lo yechia b'mshocha yovel hema yalu bahar. You won't live until b'mshocha yovel, until the yovel is blown, then you can touch the mountain. Says Rashi, what is yovel? Shofar shel ayil. Why? Shechem b'ravya koren ledichra. They called dichra is, I believe, a ram, yuvla. They called it a yovel. By the way, if you're curious which ayil, which ram it was the ram of Akedas Yitzhak. That one was the one that was blown at Sinai to allow a person to touch the mountain again. So what's a yovel? Yovel is a shofar. And the last source that will give us a question is, in case v'safarta lecha above, pasach chet, sounded familiar, right? Sheva shabtot shanim, sheva shanim. So take a look at this one. As far as Temelcham Yerachar Shabbat, last week's parsha Emor, you'll count from the day after, the first day. Miyom haviyachem et Omer atzmufa, from the day that you brought the korban Omer, sheva shabtot miyom tiyana. You're going to count seven full weeks. Ad Yerachar Shabbat hashvit esbrucha mishem yom. You're going to count seven sets of seven. And then what does that get you to? The 50th day, we craft the mincha chadasha l'Hashem, and then you bring the korban mincha. So again, how does this connect to Sfira? And then just an interesting side note, why is it called Sfira da Omer? Which I don't think we're going to have time to get to, because it is pretty late, and we have a lot of questions to try to answer. So Rabbi Riskin says Yovel. What's going on during Yovel? Yovel gives us freedom. It's really a big deal. Imagine the person that lost his field, right? He had a bad year somewhere in the 49 years, and he was forced to sell his ancestral land, and that was what he was going to do to sustain himself. So, in the world that we live in, what happens if my business goes bad and I'm forced to sell my business? The business never comes back to me. So, if I went from being a successful businessman to working for someone else, and you know I'm collecting minimum wage in a 9-to-5 job, so I'll never have the opportunity to get back there unless I figure out a way to create the capital to build a new business or buy back my business. Not so, says the Torah, by the land. The land comes back to me. Or myself personally, if I sell myself as a slave, I'm not stuck like that forever. So Rabbi Riskin points out that on the one hand, Shemitah is all about the Torah putting in a mechanism for man to overcome his personal and financial struggles. But the shofar is also reminiscent of Sinai. Sinai is also about a reset. But it's a different kind of reset. It's a spiritual reset, right? The Torah, the world is not stuck where it is forever. But Sinai tells us that there's a chance for us to uplift ourselves, put ourselves in a different place. Yom Kippur is to the year what Yovel is to a lifetime, if you will. Right? Every year on Yom Kippur, what do? We blow that shofar, we reset, and we say to ourselves that we're going to have a new Matan Torah. If I didn't get it right, which is often the case, Yom Kippur is a chance to collect myself and start again. Says Rabbi Riskin, Yovel is the exact same thing. It's a chance to catch myself and say, okay, my life is not what it should be. Let me start again. And he says, perhaps that's the reason why it's on Yom Kippur. We blow the shofar to say the year and the day are similar in nature. And perhaps he says that's why he says perhaps that's the reason why we have a big ceremony, because it is a big deal. When Yovel comes, Yovel is a big deal. So he does quote the Mishnah in Avos that says it's a much longer Mishnah, but the Mishnah says the halucho maseh lokim heima v'michtav michtav lokim hu charuta l'luchot. The pasuk from the luchos are the work of God. It's the writing of God, and it's charut al haluchot. Anybody know what charut means?
Engraved,
right? It's engraved on the lucho. So the Mishnah then continues. Al tikre charut el cheirut. Don't read it as charut, rather read it as cheirut. Shein lachem en chorin el misha osa ketama Torah. So what is a free person? A free person is someone who learns Torah. But Riskin points out that this is the idea of Yovel. That in Yovel, when the year stops, what are people supposed to do? People are supposed to go back to their most spiritual selves. It's supposed to relive Matan Torah. So what happens? If a person wants to truly be free, a person should learn Torah. Shemitah, Yovel are meant to put a person back on track. Fine. Beautiful idea. That's how he answers all of our questions. That's what the essence of Yovel is. That's why it's Yom Kippur. That's why the shofar. That's why the ceremony. That's why Shemitah. Fine, everything is beautiful. There is one problem with this like limud of the Mishnah and Avos. I think it's the Nefesh HaChayim. I didn't have a chance. I cut and pasted this little piece at the very end. But when I was writing my notes, I was no longer by my computer, and it hit me that I wasn't sure who it is. So I think it's the Nefesh HaChaim, but I could be wrong. So if you read it, we're out of time, so I won't read it inside. His very first line is that this pshat is dachuk ma'od. This is not pshat at all. So he says, actually, it's not, right? Charut and cheirut, they have nothing to do with each other. Why is that? So he says it's the nature of Torah. Torah has a lot of deep concepts that are hidden in it, and we don't really understand them unless we really think about it very deeply. So he says it's a deep concept here, but he says seichel, right? Our wisdom is really a picture. He says it is tziur hamitziud. It's the picture of reality. That's what our intelligence is. He says, what is a tziur? A tziur is from the word tzura. A tzura is an image. And how do you make an image? You make it with chakika, with chiseling something out, and that is the idea of charut. And he says, well, then all of a sudden, your seichel, your wisdom, which is something that is a very deep concept, which gives you your freedom, it all of a sudden is much more connected to the word charut. So that's how he goes and explains that it's pshat. But so it's a nice limud. But to end, you know, I thought what he was getting at is that we are limited, right? Our what we are and what we can be is limited. But when we allow ourselves Torah to come into us, so that penetrates our depths, it goes much, much deeper than anything else. It is that idea of tziur hamitziut. And that's the goal of Yovel. The goal of Yovel is to allow the depths of the Torah to penetrate into us. And when that happens, we become freer people. That is really what's supposed to happen. And that therefore is something that requires a celebration. And that is what the year of Yovel is all about. Have a wonderful Shabbos.